Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Friday, October the 8th, and tonight we're going to check with our friend George Rodriguez in South Texas. We're going to talk about redistricting, which is, of course, the big topic going on right now. We're also going to talk a little bit about the border. There are threats of more people coming, and how is, you know, what are people in the border saying about that? It's becoming a real political problem for President Biden, as we see in his public approval polls. And we're also going to chat just a bit about the abortion law here in Texas. As you may know, there was a judge, I'm not sure what part of the state he's in, but there was a judge who stopped it, and the attorney general is now going to a higher court to reinstate the law here in Texas. We'll see how that turns out. So let me say hello to our friend George Rodriguez. George, how is the weather? I hope it's nice down there.
It is gorgeous. I just came back from going to dinner with some folks, and it is spectacular outside. It is really, really nice. Low humidity, beautiful evening, mid-70s. I mean, it's really, really nice.
So it's a good night to talk, to do a little podcast, huh?
Oh, gosh, yes.
We just need to do it outside. We got to think about that the next time. We have, because it's sort of like that here, too. It's a very nice, it got a little warm in the afternoon, but I think right now it's extremely, extremely nice up here. I got to give you a little trivia. Guess who turns 78 today? Somebody that you probably saw on TV and laughed a great deal. Chevy Chase. Remember him from Saturday Night Live? 78 years old today, so.
Oh, my goodness.
If you think we're getting old, George, we are.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I remember watching Saturday Night Live coming home from a date in college. This was 1976, 1975.
Yeah.
Coming back to the apartment after a date on a Saturday night and sitting down and turning on the TV and watching Saturday Night Live for the first time. And it was hysterical. It was absolutely hysterical.
It was a lot better back then in the late 70s.
God, yes.
I think they hit their peak probably in the late 70s and into the 80s.
Yeah.
Here recently they've gone, I don't know, they're just not as funny as they used to be. I'll just say it that way.
They got too political. And, politics can be funny, but politics can also be, you know, a turnoff.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, if you're going to do political comedy, if you're going to take shots at the politicians, then you got to be an equal opportunity puncher, if you know what I mean. You got to hit both sides. Now, in all fairness to Saturday Night Live, last Saturday they had, because I didn't watch it live, but I saw the clip. They had a really funny clip on Joe Biden and the problems that he's having with the Democrats. So I thought that was, you know, pretty funny, kind of reminiscent of the way it used to be. But I do think the peak of Saturday Night Live was in the late 70s, early 80s, when they had Chevy Chase and when, you know, he would do that newscast. And he was just absolutely, you know, I used to love that line when he would go, "Hi, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not."
Or not.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. Well, George, we got some big issues here in Texas. I want to begin just on something that is sort of on the sidelines at the moment, and that's the abortion law. As you know, there was a judge. Where was the judge from? Was it Dallas or Houston? I don't remember.
It was from Dallas.
From Dallas, okay. A judge by the name of Pittman, who was the one who I guess he's blocking the the application of the law here in the states, in the state of Texas. The Attorney General, I saw a clip of him today on some interview, saying that he was going to take it to the to appeal, and he felt pretty comfortable. He felt pretty comfortable with it. So, how do you feel, George? Do you feel comfortable with where this is going? The appeal.
I do. I do. You know, it's very, very interesting how this is all playing out because there was an article in Forbes magazine, which has become extremely, extremely liberal, as well as another article that was in the New York Times, which doesn't surprise me. And in both articles, they criticized how the, get this, how the Supreme Court was interfering with the progressive agenda.
Oh,
I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
It's laughable. It's absolutely laughable, their comment. But that's how they feel. And again, never mind that the Supreme Court's role is to determine whether or not laws are constitutional or not. They're upset because it's interfering with their agenda. And of course, they're advocating for the Supreme Court to be expanded.
Right.
And I think all of this comes down to, the reason I raise that is because it all comes down to the fact that they continue to lose these key challenges,
mm-hmm.
where states like Texas have legally elected legislatures.
Right.
Legally elected legislatures enacting legal laws, laws that certainly are not discriminatory in any form or fashion. And so they don't know how to stop it, other than to argue their case as being victims. You know, there were this past Saturday, I don't know about Dallas, but in major communities across the state, there were large demonstrations by the pro-abortion groups. And, screaming and yelling here in San Antonio, there were about 2,000 in the downtown area screaming about women's right for an abortion. Well, they can still have an abortion. They don't, you know, maybe not in Texas as they would like, but they can still have an abortion.
Right.
And, it is all absolute political theater.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot overturn. I mean, the court cannot overturn. Should not overturn any kind of laws that are not discriminatory, A, and then B, that are legally passed by lawful, legally elected legislatures.
Right,
I mean,
and I
people.
You're right, and you, I think you're hitting it on, out of the park when you say that, because that's the I see two problems, or I say the left, I think, has two problems. I shouldn't say the left, but the anti-abortion people have two, or the pro-abortion people, let me express myself correctly. The pro-abortion people, I think, have two problems with the Texas law. The first one is that they don't, they've been challenged for the first time. A state has actually written a law passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, and it's completely legitimate within our way of doing business, which is the way we do it, by passing a law and signing it by the governor. The other thing that is driving them crazy about this particular law, George, is that this is the first time in the abortion debate that the baby is really the focus. Because we're not really talking here about the woman's body, which has been the argument we've heard for a long time. You know, it's my body, it's my body. It's not really your body because the heartbeat is not yours.
That's right.
You know, the heartbeat inside your body is not yours. It's not your heartbeat. It's the baby that you're carrying. And I just don't think, I think that they don't know how to deal with that.
No, they don't.
This is the one abortion debate that they cannot simply say, well, it's my body. So, they're back to the usual stuff. It's the law of the land. And as we were talking off the air, there's no such thing as an abortion law of the land, because there was never a law that was signed, passed by the legislature and signed by the governor or the president. What we have is an opinion of the Supreme Court. But opinions of the Supreme Court, as you know from your history, George, sometimes they get reversed and sometimes they get amended and sometimes you know, they're overturned by other laws. So my guess, George, and let me know how you think about it, what you think about this, is my guess is no matter what happens with the appeal, this is headed to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court next June already has an abortion case on the docket, and that's the Mississippi case. And I believe the court next June will decide 5-4 or 6-3 that states have the right to regulate abortion, and that will be the end of this debate, because then, you know, the Supreme Court will say Texas can do whatever Texas wants to do, California can do what it wants, Mississippi what it wants. And that's the way that was the idea of the country, George, when it was formed.
Well, yeah, I agree that that's where we're headed. I would like to think that that'll be the end of it, but I just don't think that it will. I think that their new ball game, their new game plan, is to pursue the issue of stacking the court,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
they're going to stack it and stack it because they're going to claim that the court. Is interfering, like they said, very bluntly, interfering with their progressive agenda.
Well,
the
if they're going to
stack of society, as they put it.
Yeah, but if they're going to stack the court, George, they've got about a year to do it, because I think after next November it's going to be more complicated. So, do you have any inclination as to when we will hear back on the appeal? It usually takes a few days, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would say that by the end of next week we'll hear something.
Okay, so maybe by the time we do our next show,
yep.
there will be a determination to it. Okay, well, we'll wait and see what happens. The Attorney General sounded extremely confident when he is being interviewed today.
I am extremely confident as well, mm-hmm. because, like I said, this is the reality. The reality is Texas did nothing wrong. Texas enacted a law legitimately with
right.
a legislature that was duly elected by citizens, and again, the law does not discriminate in any form or fashion, and it will stand. It will stand. Now, this is going to be extremely upsetting to the pro-abortion folks, but it's, you know,
well.
What can you say?
What they can do is what they can do in certain states. They can, as they like to say, they can codify Roe v. Wade and basically pass a law in California or whatever, New York. I think in New York they've actually done that already,
yeah.
where they you know, where they have Roe v. Wade. They have a state version of Roe v. Wade, and that's okay with me if that's what they want to do in New York. I mean, I'm not going to stop them. They have every right to do that, so, but I think we have every right in Texas to do whatever we're doing. Let me move on to a quick topic here before we get to redistricting, but I want to talk about the border. What we're hearing, George, and I'd like you to tell us what you're hearing down there on the border, but what we're hearing from news reports is that there are more people coming. I've heard as many as 85,000 coming in a caravan. I find that hard to believe that it could be that many, but I've been wrong before, that they're coming and they're coming. And so what are you hearing down in South Texas, George?
Yeah, the number is about 85,000. It is, you know, and it's growing, unfortunately. It is picking up speed. And they will not, it looks like they will not be coming to the Texas area this time around. Indications are that they're going to end up in Arizona, in the Yuma, Nogales area, because Texas has gotten very loud and very, just very loud on the issue of anti-immigration and using the state troopers and whatnot there. The governor has made his point. Now, this morning there was an article from a couple of the reporters that are embedded with this group that's moving north, where the Americans that are leading them, the Americans that are leading the caravan, stated that they were ready to fight. Their words, they were ready to fight to cross the border. Now, you know, they are carrying on about how The Haitians were whipped and beaten across the river. Stories have been told of people being whipped, of people being beaten back across the river. Just outrageous rumors. And what they're trying to do is literally whip up into a frenzy these people before they get to the border. And heaven help us, because it's not looking good. It's
right.
Not looking good.
Well, that's fascinating. Of course, they were using the example of that Border Patrol agent on the horse, a story that was completely wrong, that agent never whipped anybody. I mean, that is your... That was just a lie that he did that. But nevertheless, you know, this thing gets around, and before you get around to correcting it, you know, people around the world are believing it, which is the unfortunate thing. You know, what often happens with the Internet, these things get around, and it goes around the world 10 times before you correct it. But now, Yuma, Arizona, I'm not that familiar with that area. They're going to have even more complications than we in Texas, because Arizona, obviously being a smaller state with less resources, I mean, that's going to be madness if they try to go through through Yuma. I kept thinking that they might go into California.
Well,
there's that big desert out there. I think that may be the reason they don't do it.
Well, I think that the there is in California a huge wall.
Mm-hmm.
And that continues to be a deterrent.
In San Diego, you mean? I think it's in San Diego, right?
It's in San Diego, but it runs almost the entirety of the state at this point.
Okay.
And then where it doesn't run, there are mountains which are extremely inhospitable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier for them to crash. Arizona. The other issue is that in Sonora, which is the border state, the Mexican border state with
mm-hmm.
with Arizona, Sonora is heavily dominated by the cartels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are the government. So they're going to make it very, very easy to control and to organize these folks.
But what about New Mexico, George? Any you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't heard that, the interest in New Mexico
mm-hmm.
Or El Paso for that much. I mean, there's still a lot of – but see, in El Paso, you've got a cartel battle, a cartel war going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the organizers of these caravans, as well as the people themselves, they know which areas are safe, and they know which areas they've got the best chance to get into.
Yeah.
And they're focusing on a huge tent city has already developed
across from Yuma, you're saying, right? That's going to be very interesting to watch how Arizona reacts to that, because I know they have a governor who is a Republican there. I can't think of his name right now. And they have an attorney general who has also been very critical of these crossings. So it'll be interesting to see how they react to that in Arizona, and what impact that could have on Senator Kelly, who is running for re-election there in 2022. It'll be interesting to see how all of that comes together, you know?
Yeah, the governor of Arizona was here in Texas yesterday.
Okay.
With our governor and nine other governors. They were all here to have a conference at the border and to call out...
And what was the... I knew that they got together, but because we had this school shooting up here in the Dallas area, this school shooting at a Mansfield High School, that kind of detracted the news here a little bit, or distracted the news, I should say. So what did the governors agree to do? I mean, was there any specific plan of action that they put in place, George?
Well, mostly what they're going to do is share resources.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to continue to. I mean, troopers from the various other states, Oklahoma, Montana, even.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
they will continue to share resources, as well as they're going to do their best to try to track the distribution of fentanyl,
right,
which has become, you know, extremely deadly in some of these communities.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I was talking last night with our friend Bruce, and that's what he was telling me, that you know, introduction of that product in the United States, it's just gone through the roof. I mean, the explosion of the importation of that drug, it's just deadly. I mean, it's creating all kinds of crime in our cities, and that's another one of those unintended consequences of opening the border. Not just people come in, other things come in as well. We're going to take a little break, George, and we'll be right back with our friend George. We're going to talk a little bit about redistricting. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just another segment here with our friend George Rodriguez. George, redistricting is the word of the day, I guess. And there are some maps that have been presented. What I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the state Senate map has pretty much been approved. There is a debate here in the Dallas area about district number 10. A district that has been redrawn that clearly makes it more competitive for a Republican. So that is kind of a controversial thing here with the Democrats. But, you know, when you redraw a district, if you make it more competitive for a Republican over here, then it becomes more competitive for a Democrat over there. Because, I mean, you're dividing a piece of land. And so the ones that I did see were the congressional districts, the first map that I saw. And that was actually a pretty good map for incumbents, George. I mean, I don't see why any incumbent would complain. There's only two incumbents who may find themselves running against each other, or actually four. Dan Crenshaw, who may be running against Sylvia Garcia in the Houston area, two incumbents who will be running against each other. And Sheila Jackson Lee, and Mr. Al Green, I think is his name, or I don't remember his first name, but Green is his last name, in the Houston area. So those two will be running against each other. So that, you know, Green versus Sheila Jackson Lee is a Democrat district, no matter who wins. And the other one, Sylvia Garcia and Dan Crenshaw, I don't know who would win that. I mean, that's probably going to be a pretty competitive district. I'm going to give the edge to Dan Crenshaw, but that's just a guess. So my point is that, Georgia, when you look at the whole map and you look at all the drawings, it doesn't – I mean, it seems to me the incumbents came out doing rather well, George.
Yeah. You know, it is, again, the anxiety of the Democrats is that they are not going to get their way. Now, when we talk about that the maps have already been drawn – this is a preliminary. Again, we've got to understand this is strictly a preliminary. This is a proposal by the state of how the maps should be. Now we begin the issue of everybody commenting about it, everybody giving their 2 cents, everybody arguing, everybody fainting, the whole bit. Okay? So there are already screams and yells going on about, you know, that it's going to dilute the minority vote. Well, you know, again, which minority vote? Because we've got, in Houston being a perfect example, we've got the situation where the Hispanics have grown in number. And thus, you know, should we argue that their representation should be grown? On the other hand, blacks have lost population. So should we argue that they should have less representation? If you're going to argue a racial a racial argument. You know, are you represented by your party or are you represented by your race? And this is the headache that, you know, that the Democrats are going to have to grapple with inside their own party. It's going to cause some problems. The other headache is the issue of argument that many, many, many progressive Hispanics, many liberal Democrat Hispanics are now making that undocumented aliens have got to be counted. Well, again, that shoots up the amount, the number of the population of the Hispanic vote. Or Hispanic representation, that shoots it up considerably, particularly in places like Dallas and Houston. So, you know, it's going to be the proposed map, in my opinion, that the governor's office, that the attorney general's office has put together, in my opinion, is very, very simple, very honest, very straightforward, and legal. However, it doesn't favor the Democrats. Well, you know, geez, why? Because the Democrats are not the party in power.
Right. Well, that's right. I mean, it's simply a question of numbers. And the challenge, though, that I see, George, and this is where I think some Democrats better be careful what they wish for, because when you're putting these districts together, I'm talking now about the congressional districts, or the legislature districts, because those are usually smaller. They have to be roughly the same population. So we had 30 million people represented by 36 districts in Congress. Now we're going to have 30 million people represented in 38 districts. Well, those districts have to be roughly similar population, and they have to have some kind of regional integrity. You're not going to have a district that starts in Farmers Branch, Texas, and runs to San Antonio. That doesn't make any sense. So you do have to group people more where they live. And that's a problem that the Democrats have, that many Hispanics are sort of bunched together in areas where it's the same thing here in Dallas with Eddie Bernice Johnson. I mean, her district was basically put together so that a black Democrat could win. But if you start... You know, if you start, you know, moving population here and there, she may not win. Also, if you take every district and you make every district the exact population breakdown of the state, okay, whatever the ethnic background, I mean, so many whites, so many Hispanics, so many blacks, first of all, I think it would be very difficult for a lot of Hispanic candidates to win because most of them would be running in majority white districts, George. And
right. And
many of these Hispanic districts were intentionally made majority Hispanic so that a Hispanic could win. So it's a complicated way. It's always complicated to draw up districts. But I think at the end of the day, the Republicans have the votes, and the map that we will eventually see will be the one they pass. And I'm not sure the Democrats can do much about it because the Supreme Court has already said that the federal courts are not going to get involved in this, that this is a local matter, a state matter, and so it would have to be resolved here in Texas in our courts. Some Democrats, I was on Univision today with a local representative who was saying that there should be an independent party looking at the maps. And I said, well, who is the independent party? Okay, because I'd rather trust the people than some independent party, George.
Yeah, I agree. It is really, you know, the situation of playing the race game when we should be playing the party game raises complications for those that argue in behalf of race. It really does, because it always comes back to bite them. What about Hispanic conservatives, Hispanic Republicans? We don't count? Well, apparently we don't.
Yeah.
Not to them.
But we are voting in large numbers.
Well, apparently.
Yeah, apparently we're voting in large numbers because they had elections in Arlington and Fort Worth here back in June, two cities that have probably 50% Hispanic population, if not more, in Arlington, and Republicans were elected easily for mayor in both of those cities. So Republicans are, you know, there's some conservative Hispanic Republicans out there who are obviously showing up to vote. And as I always tell the Democrats, their problem is not the map. The problem is the message. And that's what the real problem is. That's why they're not winning. I mean, look, I understand their point of view. They're frustrated. But, you know, that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. Life is not fair.
Well, see, and you know, the problem is that it's those are the rules. But they don't want to play by the rules. I keep forgetting, you know. The Constitution and the rules and the laws don't matter to them.
No, that only matters when it's convenient for them to play by the
rules.
That's
right.
Then it's very convenient. When do you think, George, one last question, based on your prior experience having seen this, you know, we do this every 10 years, so I'm sure you've seen it before. When do you believe that these maps will be, let's say, ready to be, I guess, effective, because we have a primary in March, I believe. So when do you think that these maps will be effective, George?
I would hope that by no later than next July, because by then the state and the counties can then begin assigning precincts and preparing for voting.
But what happens with the primaries? Because you were going to have some new districts where you're going to have some new candidates, and I would assume there's going to be primaries in those.
That's true. I had forgotten about the primaries.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would hope that by February.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that no later than, you know, that you would. I mean, I'm hoping that by the end of the year. I mean, it can be done before the end of the year. There's no reason why it couldn't be done.
I will tell you that there are murmurings here in San Antonio that I've heard, as well as while I was in Washington, that there will be a very, very strong effort by the radical Democrats, by the socialist Democrats, to stop the elections completely if they don't get what they want.
Oh, I see. But how would they do that? I'm just curious.
Who knows?
I thought they were going to pick up a plane and maybe this time they would go to Portugal rather than stop in Washington.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that these folks are quite capable. They are quite capable of all sorts of silliness.
Yeah.
And the states, you know, the states need to prepare themselves.
I never underestimate their level of silliness. I agree with you. But the one thing that they don't have going for them right now, George, is the fact that the Biden administration is in such bad shape politically that they really cannot fall back on the Biden administration. If we had a strong Democrat president with good approval ratings, they might be able to fall back on that a little bit. But right now... George, I think people in these districts are more concerned about the price of gasoline than
maps.
That's
right. That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, I agree with you. I hope it's by February because we got to have primaries. And in the new districts, there will be at least two new congressional districts. There have to be at least some primaries to see who's going to be the nominee. So hopefully by Valentine's Day, George. Would that be cool? By Valentine's Day, we can have love and happiness here in Texas?
Let's hope. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, why not? You know, happy Valentine's Day. We all go out dancing, you know. Go out dancing with our fellow Democrats to celebrate the new era of love and happiness and new maps, George. We can all buy them a little... you know, a little Monopoly game and say, look, you know, this is your Monopoly game so you can play with your new maps.
Yeah, well, I'll keep my fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think it's going to get ugly. I really do. I agree with you on that. I think they've got some surprises, I'm sure, down the road. But I think if we learned anything from the from the when they, you know, they went to Washington the last time is that that didn't work out well for them. And I don't think this one will either. I really don't.
Yep.
All right, George. Well, as always, thank you so much for your time. You have a wonderful weekend there in beautiful San Antonio. I hope that the weather stays nice. And I hope you come up here to Dallas one of these days so we can say hello.
Thank you very, very much.
All right. Our good friend, George Rodriguez, down in San Antonio, talking a little bit about Texas, doing our weekly review of the situation in Texas, redistricting, and everything else going on here in the state of Texas. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. I think I'm going to sit down and watch me a baseball game right now. They've got some good games on television tonight. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.